Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Pat Schlarbaum, together with Ursula Ehrenberg. Good morning, Ursula.
Hello, Pat, and hello to the listener.
Well, happy spring, everyone. This is going to be going on for another beautiful day. It looks like it will be mild for this week with some gathering clouds tomorrow, but no rain until about a week from today. High around 80. For the rest of the week, highs will be in the 50s and 60s. There is a burn ban this afternoon. There will be winds of 21 miles per hour, so watch the outdoor burning.
There has been some sad news recently from the Decorah Eagles. Would you tell us about that, Pat?
Yeah, the Raptor Resource Project, home of the famed Eagle video cam, reported on March 8th. They had to announce that the fourth, the single remaining bird from the 2014 Decorah alumni, was electrocuted on Tuesday, March 2nd. This is the fourth eaglet from Decorah that we know of to die from electrocution. Bob Anderson is the director of the Raptor Resource Project. Bob found her underneath a utility pole. Talked with Bob over the weekend, and he's picked up enough dead eagles. It's really becoming quite disturbing to him, isn't it?
Pat, why does this keep happening?
Well, eagles are evolving. They're moving closer to people, which involves power lines. And Bob has coordinated eagle perch placements in Decorah, thanks to the FFA chapter there. And they've equipped poles with electrocution-proof perches to minimize these electrocutions. On a happier note, harbingers of spring have been lighting up the airways and sound and visuals. Over the weekend, there were turkey vultures. The red-winged blackbirds are back staking out their territories. And we're still waiting for the appearance of the killdeer. But those are kind of the holy trinity of the harbingers of spring. And it's starting to happen. So.
And also, the Decorah Eagles are incubating new eggs, scheduled to hatch possibly this week.
Yeah, later this week.
To see them on the webcam, the best thing to do is Google Decorah Eagles. It's a long URL, so it's hard to remember. So just Google Decorah, and remember Decorah is spelled D-E-C-O-R-A-H.
But Ursula, we've got a real exciting development here along the environmental theme for Story County. Today we have Greg Vitale and Diane Burt from the Outdoor Alliance of Story County.
Very pleased to be here.
Welcome. Would each of you tell us a little bit about your background in conservation?
Yeah, when I first came to Iowa in 1985, I started exploring with the Sierra Club in the Des Moines area. And a few years later, I was volunteering, and before you know it, everybody stepped back, and I was the local chair.
This is Greg Vitale speaking.
I moved here in 2000, and I had plugged into an incredible person named Rick Dietz, who's a paddler, among many other things. We kind of set the world on fire with water trails and water trail improvements up here.
What is a water trail?
It's like a walking trail or a biking trail. It goes from point A to point B. And the Skunk River Water Trail was an informal water trail through the DNR's publications way back in the 70s. It needed some attention at the places where you put your canoes and kayaks in and some signage and things like that so people could find where they were. We started that process. This is one of the first water trail projects in the state, actually.
Thank you. And Diane Burt?
I've been active in outdoor recreation and education, but more in the health education arena for a long time. And it's really my active involvement in helping with environmental issues is much more recent. I retired from Iowa State University. I'm now emeritus and had tremendous depth of experience in grant writing, grant reviewing. Did a lot of paddling, and Greg and I knew each other over the Wednesday evening paddles at Ada Hayden. And he heard I was retiring and wondered if I would want to move my grant writing experience into environmental and education activities.
And you've established a non-governmental conservation organization. Tell
board.
Us a little bit more about your Outdoor Alliance, Greg.
I kept asking Mike Cox, the director of Story County Conservation, Jim Pease, one of the board members for Story County Conservation, and Ted Tedasco, another member of the Story County Conservation Board, when is this 501c3 partner group going to form? And after a couple of years of asking those three people that question, Mike Cox said to me, why don't you just go do it?
Why don't you just do it? Yeah.
So I said, well, I could probably do that.
And what was the purpose of this?
Some people are hesitant to give money to a government agency to do a project. And money that's given to Story County Conservation for projects actually has to go through the general fund, to Story County government's general fund. And it may or may not get back to where it was targeted. So we kind of solved that problem. But it seems like, from what I can understand, the big push has been to have a partner at Story County Community Foundation, because this is an effort that has been kicked around in Story County since the early 70s when there was a proposed lake on the north side of Ames.
Story County Conservation is a government agency?
Yes.
Belongs to the county?
Yes.
The Outdoor Alliance is, in a sense, a conduit for funding the efforts of the conservation.
We're here to help whoever we can, informal groups, city governments, formal groups, that is 501c3 groups, and enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation in Story County.
Mm-hmm. So why is it necessary to have a conduit organization like this?
People that want to make donations to conservation, but they don't want it commingled with the general funds, and they don't want to have to depend on votes to get it to where they want it to go. And so we made that opportunity available in Story County.
There are also funds available for non-government organizations, NGOs, and like the Partners of Story County couldn't apply for those because they are partners of the government organization. Any money they raise goes into the government organization. So
your autonomy is going to be one of your strengths.
Yes.
What are some of your visions? What would you like to see accomplished through the Outdoor Alliance?
There's a lot of informal groups out there. One of the most obvious and numerous informal groups are the cyclists in Story County. And it would be wonderful to work with them on a project because a lot of them are not 501c3s. Mm-hmm. And grants often have a match that's needed. And so we could help those informal groups be more successful.
And the Heart of Iowa Trail has really become an incredible amenity. And those trails take you to the environmental hotspots around Story County.
And we have a new trend happening at the ISU Research Park with actually Story County Conservation developing a park within the research park. Pretty soon people will be able to bicycle through the research park, and they're interested in having events there for the community to show that it's not just research, it's also a green environment and conservation and education about the outdoors.
This would be a public park to bring people into the area.
Yes, it'll be a Story County Conservation facility in the wetlands that is going to be between kind of where the present research park is and where the new hub is developing.
Can you describe approximately where we're talking about?
Over south of Highway 30 at University. You go south there and you get down to the research park area, the North Loop and the South Loop. Well, if you go on down what would be University Boulevard, go further south, there's a new hub coming. There'll be a park between where the current research park is and where this new hub is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a stream along there, a green area, and of course, you know, the research park development of that area, they're trying to be conservation-minded and have a green buildings and...
And a bike trail.
There'll be a bike trail through there.
That's interesting.
Walking trails, yes.
I understand there's a Iowa Cultivation Corridor.
The Iowa Cultivation Corridor is actually kind of between Ames and Des Moines, and it could even be circulating Des Moines. It's more the technology development area. They're trying to eat with economic development. We're trying to grow green industries in this part of the state.
What exactly is a cultivation corridor?
The cultivation corridor is coming out of the agricultural economic development. This will be an emphasizing growing our agriculture and in biotechnology in central Iowa here. And it's, you know, growth of agriculture-related industries. The bioeconomy, it's been growing.
Will your organization assist with environmental outreach with the youth of Story County?
Well, that's our first project that we launched really is to help get students K through 12 out into the Story County Conservation facilities for learning project, gathering seeds of native plants, helping remove invasive species. And two schools have taken advantage of this already.
And there'll be more in the spring. The spring is the primary season for service learning projects and students going out in nature.
This year we were approached by actually Story County Conservation. They wanted to submit a small grant for boot cleaning stations and education about why you would want to clean your boots. Why would you want to clean your boots before you go into a conservation area?
Yeah.
Remove, you know, the seeds of invasive species.
Garlic mustard.
That's right.
Spread around
exactly
like that way.
On
you
your
want
boots.
To start right at the source. So
right.
those kids have that opportunity to.
Well, this will be education for everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone going in will have an opportunity to stop and clean their boots before they go in. to the areas of Story County Conservation. Now, the grant has just been submitted, but they needed an NGO to help
Story
grant.
County Conservation could not ask for that grant directly. They needed a partner to do that.
Is this unique to Story County?
No, it's not unique to Story County. I believe the County Association of Conservation Boards.
Of 99
yeah.
County Conservation Boards.
According to their analysis of a few years ago, about two-thirds of the counties in Iowa had one or more 501c3 partners to work with. And Story County was one of those that did not.
Story County was, ironically, one of the early fosterers of the County Conservation Board movement, I think 1954.
Yes, so that's correct. It was very early in the early 50s, yeah.
So you're pretty key environmental educators and have a diverse background in this work.
Yes, the board is well established, and former board members were well established in conservation and outdoor recreation and education. John Pullman, he's been active environmentally for a decade or two.
Oh, yeah, he's been on the board.
And he's been on the conservation board.
For a number of years.
Yep. And Linda DeZalatel used to be an educator at Story County Conservation in recent. And Mike Metz was one of the founding members and helped get the process through the IRS filing requirements. And then Todd Burris was a founding member, too, who helped get us through that 501c3 process.
Oh, sure, with the Ames Tribune.
Grant writing and the nature of what you're doing, has it become more important recently in terms of making up for possible less funding coming through public money?
That's the idea. You know, so much is talked about public-private partnerships. To help fund more projects, they need a partner that's strong enough to help move them along, and that's one of the things that we're doing, yes. The grant money is hard to come by. REAP, for example, Resource Enhancement and Protection, one of the main ways to fund so many wonderful projects in Story County and across the state, routinely has many more good projects than even come close to being able to be funded. And the number one project request tends to be trails. So there's a big need there, but the grants of all kinds are getting harder to get.
We're speaking with Greg Vitale and Diane Burt with the Outdoor Alliance of Story County.
Yeah.
Are there other things you'd like to see work in this organization do the most good?
Well, of course, we want to get members, people who are interested in what we're doing. And, you know, first you have to inform people what's going on before they're going to say, hey, yeah, we want to donate money to this. So we're kind of at the informing stage right now. We partner with a lot of other organizations, enhance awareness of what we have here in Story County, get people in the out-of-doors. You know, there's a lot of programs to get children in the out-of-doors, and we need more of those, but we also need to get adults into the out-of-doors. There's some wonderful resources here in Story County already. We want to improve upon those. And, you know, we have some nice greenbelt trails, but you'll all of a sudden run into private property and can't go further. So when there's opportunities to extend those greenbelts, we want to help be able to do that. We partner with other groups to do that.
We have been involved in minor ways with trying to acquire more public land already, including in the research park and that project and encouraging that project along. It had some momentum before we even showed up, but we're there and we're supporting that project too. And there's other projects that we're trying to initiate or nudge the Conservation Board to engage in.
We're speaking with Greg Vitale of the Outdoor Alliance, and there's an upcoming event which is going to kind of launch the effort of the organization. And tell us again when.
There'll be our kickoff event for membership March 26th at Story County Conservation's McFarland Park. Light desserts served at 7 p.m. Jim Pease is going to be talking about partnering for conservation.
Yeah. People can enjoy it. Mr. Jim Pease at that presentation.
Yes. So.
Tell us just a word or two about Mr. Pease.
The man's an amazing person. He travels a lot these days. He's funny. He's bright. He's kind.
And he's studying our Iowa rivers.
He started that program with the Iowa River Revival people. Mm-hmm. He's been paddling a lot of rivers doing the biology assessments so that the next river book about Iowa will have more of that information in it.
Hopefully he'll touch on that. So
that's March 26th at 7 p.m. at Story County Conservation's McFarland Park, just northeast of Ames.
Dayton Road to the T, and you'll follow the signs.
And do you have a website? That?
Yes, we have a website, oasco.org for Outdoor Alliance of Story County.
And we'll put a link to that on our website
when we post the
show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in.
And
really
thanks for all you're doing for conservation.
Thank you for having
us. Diane Burt, Greg Vitale.
Thank you. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Every month, we feature a community service on Local Talk, and this month, we have been focusing on Worldly Goods, the local fair trade store on Main Street in Ames. Kay Patak usually conducts the community service appreciation interviews that we hold during the month, but Kay is preparing to leave town for a while, so I'm going to step into her auspicious shoes today. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, and I'm here with Pat Schlarbaum, your other host. The manager of Worldly Goods is also here with us today, Andrea Gronau. Mm-hmm. And thank you for joining us, Andrea.
Well, thank you for having me. I am the store manager, but it's really volunteers that keep the store going. Anytime throughout the day, you can come in and see a volunteer at the cash register.
How long has Worldly Goods been in Ames?
Well, it started in 1987, okay. So we've been around a long time. In 1946, a volunteer for the Mennonite Central Committee had traveled and went to Puerto Rico, where she saw them making lace there and saw how poor they were and realized that something needed to be done. So by her trips to Puerto Rico and selling the lace back in the United States and taking the money directly back to the artisans, that's where the fair trade movement began.
So back up again for a minute. Who was this person?
Edna Byler. And she was with the Mennonite Central Committee, the Mennonite Church.
Okay.
So this is not in Iowa.
Okay.
This is a national movement started through the Mennonite Church.
And she began to bring back
lace from Puerto Rico.
From Puerto Rico. Uh-huh.
And then gave the money directly back to the artisans. And that was in the 40s.
And that was the inception of the fair trade concept?
In the United States.
In the United States.
Yes.
And what is basically the mission or the concept?
Well, through the Fair Trade Federation, there are 9 principles that must be followed. Basically, they are making sure that the artisan gets paid a living wage within the country's context. So it's not about paying Western world wages directly to a third world artisan. No, it's about giving them a living wage within their country, protecting the labor, making sure that they're not forced to work in unsafe conditions or that children are being forced to work. They protect the environment.
This is an international set of principles, or is this
yes.
United States based?
The Fair Trade Federation is United States based, and mm-hmm. then the World Fair Trade Organization began after the Fair Trade Federation, and they've adopted the similar principles. So,
is this a relatively widespread phenomenon throughout the world now?
Yes. It's very popular in Europe. There are many European fair trade organizations.
The people who sell to fair trade organizations, are there any in the United States, or is this something that's specific to certain countries?
So it is mostly based on third world countries and developing countries, but there are some fair trade organizations in the United States. Women's Bean Project, which is one we sell in our store, it's a Denver, Colorado-based company where they realized they couldn't just give women a place to live. They needed to teach them how to go to a job, how to dress for a job, how to be on time for a job, how to act at a job. There's just so many things that needed to be given to these women, not just a shelter, that they started Women's Bean Project, where they package different food products and mostly bean soups and jelly beans. And then the women go through this program and then graduate out into the food service industry around Denver.
From bean soups to jelly beans.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a spectrum.
Yes. They have dips also, some fantastic dips.
Uh-huh. So that's interesting. So there are some groups in the United States that qualify mm-hmm. as fair trade as well.
Yes. There's also a group around the Chicago area called Prosperity Candle, and they are teaching the women to make candles.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe some of the groups that you sell from?
We use fair trade wholesalers, so I don't get to go to all of these countries because we do represent 50 different countries, and it would be impossible to gather all the wonderful items from those countries. But we work with members of the Fair Trade Federation. And then I know that they have followed the fair trade principles that we all want to ensure that are happening. ever since I've started about 2.5, almost 3 years ago, we have had more and more choices in that short span of different fair trade companies that are doing business that way.
So tell us about some of the groups that make the products that you're selling.
Well, we have a group that does elephant poop paper in Sri Lanka. Their elephants were being killed at an alarming rate, and an American professor went there and saw that he could build a whole economy based on caring for the elephants, gathering the elephants' poop, making it into paper, and then designing the paper, and then selling it. And it created a whole economy where the locals felt it was worth trying to save the elephants instead of killing them.
And turn elephant dung into paper.
Yes. And wow. We have it in every color, shape, and size in the store. It's worth coming in and looking at.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Give us another example.
Something I'm wearing that your listeners cannot see, but a snare wire bracelet. In Zambia, there's a huge poaching problem there. And people are going and taking down the illegal snares and taking the wire from them and making jewelry. And $5 of every snare wire piece that's sold goes directly back to the anti-poaching efforts there.
Tell us about coffee and chocolate. I know those are products often associated with fair trade.
Yes, very much synonymous with it.
What's the story with those two products?
They are the first two agriculture products that started with fair trade, and they started being certified in 1988. So right after Worldly Goods, they started really receiving the fair trade certification. Why it's important for coffee and chocolate to be fair trade? First and foremost, child labor is a huge issue. Hershey's Chocolate has voiced that they will consider taking child labor out of their supply chain by the year 2020. That is not anything written in stone, and they can change their mind at any time. So
it's 5 years from now.
Yes. They are still not paying attention to where their chocolate is being sourced.
So child labor is associated with chocolate and coffee?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Parents can't afford to send their children to school, so the thought is if they put them in the fields picking, they can help increase the family's income. Well, if they could be paid a living wage ahead of time, the children could be in school and the family could still be okay, and it breaks the cycle of poverty.
Fair trade coffee and chocolate is not associated with child labor. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, mm-hmm. That is what I'm saying.
And what is shade coffee?
Shade coffee is coffee that's grown under the canopy of the rainforest. It is thought to have more health because it has the diversity of other plants around it. And actually, with the principles of fair trade, they're looking at the environment as well. So that's another reason most of the fair trade coffee is organically grown. So there's not the extra use of pesticides and chemicals that you would find in regular coffee.
Mm-hmm. Worldly Goods is a nonprofit organization, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
The purpose of our service appreciation segment is really for organizations that serve. How do you see fair trade stores as serving the world, both as for the consumers and the people that create the goods?
Well, we are educating our customers every day that come into the store. If you walk into the store, it's a delight for your eyes with all the colors and shapes, but also there are stories that around on each of the products that as many times as we can get stories out there, because sometimes the stories are just too numerous to get on an item before it sells out the door. But we want to share the story of the artisan, what we're doing for the artisan, how fair trade helps in your everyday lives. I mean, women play a huge role in fair trade.
Why is that?
Well, women are the caretakers of the world. I mean, they are taking care of the elderly and the children around the world. And a lot of times they're the underserved population in a country. And 70% of our fair trade artisans are women. So by helping the women be able to care for the children and the elderly and still have a wage that helps tremendously, whether it's in the United States or around the world, giving them a chance.
That's really interesting statistic.
Yeah, one other thing that I want to make sure to mention about Worldly Goods and how we serve our community here is all throughout the year we may have benefit shopping nights, but we're most known for our benefit shopping nights in the month of November for the holiday season, where local nonprofits can come in and host an evening and we will donate 15 to 20% of the proceeds back to the local nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. So you're really connecting to other nonprofits in the community as well as to really, it sounds like creating a connection between consumers in the United States and the people that really make the product.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We have Skyped in our store before with some of our vendors directly, especially the ones in Peru. One of our former volunteers, while she was in college, volunteered at Worldly Goods and went off to start a women's cooperative in Peru knitting alpaca. And her mother drives up regularly from Des Moines to still volunteer in the store.
And do you sell their products?
We do sell their products. We've Skyped with the women. They just think it's amazing that people in Iowa care so much about them. And we had a fundraiser for their new sewing workshop. And so
that's very, very interesting. It's a very human story, isn't it?
It definitely is. And the women just appreciate that we care about them. That very little did we send back to them for their benefit, but they were just so thrilled that someone cared about them.
Well, we're speaking with Andrea Grunau from Worldly Goods. And thank you so much for coming in, Andrea. And you're located on Main Street.
Yep, right in the heart of Main Street in downtown
Main Street, between Kellogg and Douglas.
Yes. Yep.
And you have a website?
We do, worldlygoods.org.
Worldlygoods.org. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, and thank you for having me and letting me share a little bit about fair trade this morning.
Okay, thank you.
I paint my face every color. I do my body just the same. I try to blend with the mustard.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was the Harmelays who graced our radio station last week. We had our first membership meeting, and it wasn't really a membership meeting. It was a membership event, and the Harmelays performed for us, and it was really very delightful, and we thank them very much for that. We have Gail Seiler here with us in the studios. Gail is a reporter for KHOI. And this past week was the time for bills in the state legislature to either die or move on. And in order to keep a bill alive, it had to receive committee approval by last Thursday. And one bill that died was a bill that would have raised the compulsory school age to 18 instead of 16.
The bill was sponsored by Senator Herman Kornbach, a Democrat from Ames and chair of the Senate Education Committee. He introduced the bill because he felt that a young person's future is limited without a high school diploma. Last week, he was quoted as saying that he would introduce the bill again next year. We did a Local Talk segment recently on this bill, and we aired an interview with Giannis Michaels, the director of alternative learning programs for the Ames Community School District. He spoke about a number of programs, interventions, and alternatives that they have for students who, for a variety of reasons, are not on track to graduate from high school.
Gail Seiler, one of KHY's reporters, brought us that segment. And Gail is a professor of education at Iowa State and has been able to make us more aware of issues concerning education, and we really appreciate that. Hello, Gail, and thanks for coming by for this last segment of Local Talk.
Hello, Ursula and Pat, and thanks for letting us talk about this issue. It's an interesting one. I started working on this story when the bill was first introduced, the bill to raise the compulsory school age in Iowa. I noticed that very seldom were the perspectives of young people themselves heard in the discussion around that potential legislation. And we often hear about students who excel in school and for whom school seems to work just fine, but not so often from those for whom school is not working so well. So in order to access youth for this story, I contacted Youth and Shelter Services in Ames, also known as YSS. Youth and Shelter Services is a nonprofit organization who, for more than three decades, has served more than 46,000 youth in residential programs, counseling, and family foster care. One program that Youth and Shelter Services provides is the AMP program. AMP, A-M-P, stands for Achieving Maximum Potential, and their brochure explains that it supports youth who have been involved in foster care, adoption, and other out-of-home placements. Youth and Shelter Services graciously allowed me to come to an AMP group meeting and ask for volunteers who would be willing to talk to me about school. I spoke with six youth for this segment. We're not using their names or the names of any schools they have attended, but we want the listener to hear their stories. Two of the youth currently attend traditional high schools and are part of the AMP program as well. Three of those I interviewed are currently in a classroom program at Youth and Shelter Services. And the sixth young person has already obtained her high school equivalency after leaving a traditional high school and an alternative school. They ranged in age from 13 to 17, and KHOI is honored to share with our listeners some of their stories and thoughts on school. When I asked the youth about their experiences in high school, they shared varying perspectives on school, as we'll hear in this first clip.
School was a positive place for me, a place I liked to be, and so when I got there, I tried to roll off as many problems as I could, just forget about most things so I can focus and have fun in school. And it affected me when I got out of school because I would be – those problems just came back, and I didn't really deal with them while I was in school, and because I really didn't want to. I mean, it wasn't something I wanted to do, but when I got out of school, I would – the problems would come right back, and I would get very angry and frustrated with things, so I would act like a completely other person outside of school instead of in school. So it affected me big time because I would get in fights and stuff like that, and I ended up here. So pretty long process.
I'd say school is pretty much a positive thing, and I'd go to school. I'd be the happiest kid on earth, and then I'd leave school, and it would just turn into a nightmare, and all my problems would come back, and I would just forget about all the positive things and think about the negative and never got happiness outside of school.
School is very important to me, and so, like, every day, like, there's days that I don't want to get up and go to school, but then I remember, like, this would be my future, and so I get up every day, and school is, like, kind of like a motivator for me to keep going.
Because if I don't feel like I'm, like, looking forward to going to school and to be, like, hanging out with someone or doing something, then, like, it all just, like, mixes together, and it's like I don't want to go to school at all. And then, like, the classes, I struggle with the classes, too, sometimes. So it's just, like, all, like, in general, school is difficult for me.
The youth also talked about how both teachers and peers have shaped their experiences in school. They told how teachers can at times have a positive impact on students, but at other times can make school a place where students don't want to be. And peer relations as well can be either positive or negative, as we'll hear in this next part.
I don't really like school, to be honest. The school that I'm at right now, I feel like a lot of the kids already have, like, their cliques and, like, their groups. And so it's really difficult to, like, come to that school and then try to, like, make friends and stuff.
To be honest, when I started school, it was, like, in freshman year, that's when things started to go downhill for me because it was very hard for me to pay attention during school and, like, things were hard and the teachers would not, like, I would ask them questions, but then they would, like, give me another question with that question. And I'm just, so it was very confusing for me, and I'm like, okay, thanks for answering it. So I know that's when they transferred me to an alternative school, and that's when it was very difficult because I know, like the cliques, like, they were very disrespectful, and, like, the kids, like, they wanted to be tough, run everything, and, like, I didn't like that. But the teachers over there at the alternative school, it was very supportive. Like, there was only 100 students there, so, like, they actually paid attention to you. Though the reason I messed up is because I went to the wrong crowd. So my grades started to go low, and, like, my GPA started to get low. And that's when I started to skip school, and I had no hope for me. And I know that's when I got introduced to the HiSET program, and that's when I graduated.
I went into school with, like, a lot of disorders. So with that going on, I would, like, try my best to function, but I'd find it so hard to pay attention. And when I would miss something and ask the question of the side teacher, they'd be like, every time, why aren't you paying attention? Yeah. Not being understanding that I have disorders and I'm trying, but I can't. Like, when somebody's working through homework with me, I actually understand what I'm doing.
Of course, teachers have a lot on their plates, even more so now with standardized tests, but it's important to hear student voices about the impact that teachers and peers can have on them. The youth spoke more specifically about the power that teacher expectations had on their motivation in school. We'll hear them talk about how they often rise to the level of what teachers expect of them, something that's referred to as a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I would find that very frustrating when you want to learn and the teachers are not really guiding you and helping you. I feel like it's more of like a reason why you don't want to go to school or why you don't want to do your homework. I feel like teachers are there to help you, and if you have a question, they should be willing to help you.
Some of the teachers that I had at my old schools, they were, like, sarcastic. They were very sarcastic. And if you were, like, that straight-A student that always got their homework done and everything, then when you went to go ask the question, then they'd kind of look at you different, like, why are you asking a question, like, it doesn't matter, you're going to do bad on the test or you're going to do your homework wrong anyways.
I know when I went to school, you have them teacher pets. You know they're going to do good and, like, they always got the answers. And I know, like, when I struggled in school, a lot of the teachers put me on the spot in the middle of the classroom and they know I don't know the answer because I'm really bad at that subject. Like, in science, I'm really bad in science. He asked me a question, I just froze. I'm like, dude, you know I don't know the answer. And then, like, you're just waiting. Like, he's like, okay, we're going to wait now until you find the answer. Ever since I started doing bad in school, and, like, I didn't want to go to school. And that's one of the reasons why I did get my GED, because I thought that's the only way I could graduate. And, like, teachers started to give up on me when I started to skip. And, like that's not what, like, you were supposed to, like, push them to do good and push them to actually achieve something. But, like, I just felt like they gave up. And, I don't know, it just hurt. That's very true, because teachers, when you come up to them, they don't look at you the same as what they look at as a straight-A student. They would look at you as you're not going to get anything done, or they would judge you instead of looking at you because of who you are. And some days, there will be days that you're not always going to be a straight-A student or get your homework done, because our outside life still bothers us, and which causes us not to do as good as they want us to. And I feel like teachers should also give us, like, I don't know, sometimes just maybe get on our level and understand what we're going through. Kind of give us a break, kind of, because we're also going through stuff outside and then going to school with a lot of stress, trying to do homework and have these all these expectations that we're trying to fill during high school. And with having that causes a lot of stress, which causes us to maybe not do as good as we want to because of those things.
I feel like being that teachers are in the school environment, like, all day long, and they see all of the stuff that goes on, you'd think that they would be more understanding about what's going on at school and the things that are going down and stuff. But it's almost like they're the complete opposite, and they don't see anything, they don't understand anything. And that's really frustrating, because it's like you would think that they would understand and they would, you know, be paying attention and be reminded of, like, when they were in school and certain things that went down, and it's just not like that at all.
If you look at data on high school graduation rates in Iowa, you'll see that despite an overall graduation rate just above 90%, some racial and ethnic groups, for example, African American students, have graduation rates that are much lower. One of the interviewees, who is African American, spoke about how she felt in school and the importance of having more African American teachers.
Sometimes you feel like you don't fit in, I guess, because you feel like you're just being singled out, mostly because there's a lot of white American people at our school, and you just feel out of place, kind of. And I don't think people should judge what color you look like, even though people these days kind of do. But people shouldn't look at what skin color they are. I think they should judge you because of who you are. But, you know, people don't do that these days. But if an African-American teacher came up and told me, I would do it and understand what they're talking about. Like, it's just a lot different because, like, I don't know. I feel like you respect them because they're your race. I don't really understand that. But you just look up to them, I guess. They're like African-Americans. You feel like they understand you. Because a lot of African-Americans kind of been through what you have been through, and I feel like they understand more, and you'll be able to communicate with them and being able to let them help you instead of push them away.
Two of the young people are currently in an alternative school placement through Youth and Shelter Services, but will be returning to a local high school soon. So I asked them if they ever thought of dropping out, and here's what they said.
I've thought about it. I've been from school to school. And it's hard adjusting when you go to a new school to another new school, especially in high school. But I've thought about it. But in the long run, I've thought about it even more. It'll affect me way worse in the long run than right now, because I could drop out and have a lot of fun and do other things. But once I get to, like, to be 24, you can't party your whole life or do kiddish things your whole life. You have to grow up at some point. And that's what kind of motivates me. I like to want to go into the future and do something instead of saying I dropped out and can't get a job and that kind of thing. But yes, I've thought about it a lot. It's really hard not to.
I've thought about it, but I've always just wanted to be in school because you got a lot of people you talk to and you get a lot better job and help the world when you get graduated.
During our conversations, I told the young people about the bill that had been introduced into the Iowa legislature that would have raised the compulsory age to stay in school to 18, and I asked them what they thought about that idea. So here is what they said. Their responses show great insight into this issue.
I think they should raise the age to 18 because a lot of kids that I've met personally have dropped out for their own reasons and their parents, like, they just sign the papers, you know, just let them drop out. And I think it should be raised to 18 because when you're younger, you don't think as clearly. You don't have the same thought process as if you're when you're 24 and you want, and you know, you're like, I don't have a job or anything because, you know, I didn't go to high school. But if you raise it to 18, I mean, they'll go to school. They might hate it. But once they get older, they'll thank the person that told them, you know, stick with it and do this. And I guess this law isn't basically that person to say, stick with it. You can persevere, but there's always a person there that can help you, push you. And I think that law would be like someone there helping you, pushing you. And so I think it would be like a really good thing for younger kids and like freshmen and stuff?
I would say yes to raise it to 18, because when you're in school, you might not like the work. When you have your diploma, you get a lot more jobs than just going out without a diploma. Then you won't have to worry about getting a GED, and then you're just done with school if you don't want it.
I mean, I know a lot of kids that would really suck for, because they don't function very well in like the normal high school environment. And in certain educational or alternate educational programs, you actually have to drop out before you can sign up. There's a lot of things that's so much easier if you drop out first.
To be honest, I do agree, but then I don't. Like, I still feel like I know why when I dropped out, like, I did it because I had no way I could graduate. I only had 2.5 credits, and that's really bad for a 16-year-old. So I feel like if they do drop out, they should at least go to the HISET program, GED program, mm-hmm. because that, when I got my GED, I still got a diploma. I still got to have a ceremony, and it felt real, and I was so proud of myself, and they gave me a second chance to actually go to college. Because I went to college. I have 3 credits right now, and I never thought I'd actually do that. So I do agree, but then I don't. I still feel like if they do drop out, they should still go get their GED.
I think just like with anything, it'll work with some people and it won't work with other people. I mean, high school kind of sucks sometimes. And if you, like he said, if you don't function well in high school, or if you have different issues going on at home or something and you can't stay in school, then I think changing that would be really difficult for some people.
One of the young people, the one who left high school and then left an alternative school and later obtained her GED, asked if high school students might be listening to this broadcast. And she said she wanted to say something to them. These were her final words.
I just want to say to all the high school students out there, please stay in school and graduate, because college is so much different. I've experienced that. I've been on campus, and the teachers are amazing. You have more freedom. They're matured. Like, everybody's matured, and they're nice to you, and teachers actually sit down and help you. So that's my suggestion. So please stay in school.
It was very inspiring to speak to these young people. They spoke honestly about school, and for me, what I learned is that if we as a society don't find ways to meet the needs of smart, insightful students such as these, we're all going to lose.
And that was Gail Seiler speaking with young people at Youth and Shelter Services, mm-hmm. the AMP program.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts today, Pat Schlarbaum and Ursula Rudenberg. Today we had Greg Vitale and Diane Burt for the Outdoor Alliance of Story County. They were here in the studio with us and telling us about their new organization with conservation in mind. We also heard from Andrea Grinnell from Worldly Goods and anonymous interviews with young people who are part of the AMP program, Achieving Maximum Potential, at the Youth and Shelter Services.
Local Talk is engineered by Rick Morrison, and the music you have heard today was Hesitate by the Harmalies. The Harmalies are a two-person band, and they came to the Ames Pantorium last Wednesday evening when we had our first membership evening, and it was really fun to have them here. We want to get to know you, and so please come to our membership meetings. We're going to hold them once a month. Looking forward to the one in April. Our theme song is Backtrackin', as always, by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, and see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations as we speak with and other resources mentioned on our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, and if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or you can find us online at khoifm.org. Please remember, your participation as the audience is absolutely what makes KHOI possible and makes Local Talk possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again,
on the radio.
I do my body just the same. I try to blend with the mustard.